Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 14 of Bear Belief. Hello, Jessica.
Hello.
Happy Celeste. Pride! You didn't know it was Pride? What's wrong with you?
Well.
So, you guys know we record these in advance, so it's not quite Pride Month, but this episode will be coming out during Pride Month. And, appropriately, we decided we might want to explore the team. Oh my God.
I said that. There's your accent.
I said that like a Quebecer.
The team?
The team. There. You want some poutine?
Don't take away your H.
So we thought that since it was Pride Month, that we would have a conversation around LGBTQ themes and how that works out in the church. It's a very kind of... it can be controversial. I think it's probably one of the most controversial topics in modern Christianity, yeah. With certain aspects, especially when it comes to trans people. I feel like gay people have made certain advances, but right now the hot topic is trans people. Mm-hmm. Are seem really upset with trans people for some reason. So we thought we would explore that a little bit. I think it's been pretty clear since the beginning of our podcast that I'm part of the LGBTQ community. I don't think I've hidden that. It's come up a couple times. And as someone who considers himself ex-Catholic, I can tell you that that was a big factor in me leaving the Catholic Church, like having that dichotomy of what the church was teaching me in the early 80s about who I was and how I felt. A lot of it didn't make any sense. So, and I'm sure that that's something that you must find in your ministry, like when you're with your people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it was back in the early millennium, was like in the 2000s, it was a really heated issue within definitely the Anglican Church. It was at every level of conversation and canons and what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. And then Quebec was always different because of the way how we do marriage, right? And who can marry.
Yes.
And so, yeah, you got those platitudes of like love the sinner, hate the sin. I
hate that love the sinner, hate the sin thing. Because I think it's just camouflage for treating people badly kind of thing and playing morality police. And again, the Christian measuring stick and all that stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's where it, so I remember being a young person and sort of being around a leadership within the Anglican circles. And he was really of the mentality that homosexuality could be healed. And his resource was an author named Leanne Payne. And so he encouraged me to read this book. I read this book. I remember I was sage up. So I was like 17, right?
And impressionable.
And so I'm reading this and I wasn't questioning my sexuality. It was just the Dawson Christian Fellowship at that time. So a school's...
The chaplain or whatever?
No, he wasn't the chaplain, but so a space for Christian kids to hang out and
so it's kind of like
fellowship.
A club.
So I had... a classmate in my Spanish class who hung around the Etc. Club, which was the LGBTQ too.
They called the LGBTQ Club the Etc. Club?
They called it Etc.
Oh, that is a brilliant name. I love it.
Right? And so I was hanging out there and then he'd come into the room and then some of the other members would be like, I don't know if this is good. And like he's gay, right? I'm like, he's very gay. there was no questioning his sexuality whatsoever. And this created like a kerfuffle. This leader guy was sort of our go-to mentor in this, and he, I remember having a quote unquote Bible study about it, and yeah, so this was his main source. I forget the book's name, but it was Leanne Payne. But if you read all the stories, it was people who had very traumatic events in their lives and then decided to take on like a gay lifestyle in response to trauma versus maybe actually being gay. So when they had the healing from that trauma, they were then like heterosexual again, you know? And I'm like, well, that's not the same thing.
But that's taking a binary perspective on sexuality. And I think there's a very famous sexuality study that was done by Professor Kinsey back, I think it was either the 50s or 60s. And he was one of the first ones to study heterosexuality mm-hmm. versus homosexuality. And he asked a bunch of people to rate their sexuality. And the shocker, and this was a huge revelation at the time and very controversial, and the guy was, you know, made into a pariah because of it, revealed that most people don't consider themselves 100% one thing or the other. It's sexuality is a spectrum, and people lay somewhere in the middle. There are people, I consider myself one of them. I am definitely, if I'm not 100% homosexual, I am 99.9%. Oh, there might be a little fleck of, I don't know, woman lover in there somewhere, but he's yet to make its way out. He's very, very hidden. But I think a lot of people would say they fall somewhere in between. So I think I think conditions can be met where, like, you see homosexuality peek its head in prison. A lot of, there's like prison gay is like mm-hmm. a thing that happens, and that happens both in male and female prisons. So I think it's not as robust as people think. And I think our society, like it or not, the way things are right now, it is geared towards heteronormative lifestyle. I mean, you hear it, like I remember, or I've seen it, but people will, you know, you'll get to like a 5-year-old coming home from kindergarten, they'll be like, oh, did you find a girlfriend? And that's pushing that heteronormative idea onto these kids mm-hmm. right from the get-go. So I think we're kind of forced into a binary. So I think that's how I would explain that, those situations where people flip-flop from one sexuality to another. And also there's a question of times. I think today those people might describe themselves as pansexual mm. or even, I don't know, there's all kinds of them now. Like,
well, and it was funny sort of growing up, because there seemed to be this time, maybe just before the millennial turn or just after, where you'd see a lot of middle-aged women, like women in their 50s who had been divorced or lost their husband, but would find that companionship and in a lesbian relationship, like full out, and be like, oh man, I never knew this about myself. Again, because of these sort of stigmas that, no, this is what's expected. This is what you're supposed to do.
Well, I think it's about representation and exposure too. Like when I was started questioning my own feelings of homosexuality as a young kid, you don't understand what's happening. And at that time, there was no examples of it. Like the examples that you would have, like I remember in my village where I grew up, there was one gay person that I knew of that worked at the grocery store. And like, he was kind of treated like the village joke, you know? Oh. And people would refer to him in a very kind of demeaning way. And I would see this guy, and it didn't make sense that that was me, right? Like, mm-hmm. I didn't relate to this person at all. Like, this person was kind of like a caricature of like what homosexuality could be, mm-hmm. and that's not me. At least I don't think it's me. And so it's hard to make that transition to identify yourself. And I think so. My own mom came out in, oh God, she told us she was in a lesbian relationship, I think in 96 or 95, or when she, 97 maybe. So she would have been like well into her 40s or 50s, which is the same situation. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, had kids, got divorced, got into this relationship. But I don't think it was an option for these women in the 50s.
No.
You know? Like, especially if you think about, like, from a misogynistic perspective, like, women didn't have a whole lot of choice. Like,
And you had to get married to even survive, yeah. right? Like, because you couldn't get a credit card on your own. You couldn't buy a house on your own. Like, you needed that male representative husband. Yeah.
So what choice do you have, really?
So, but, and I think now, so my daughter's been exploring a lot of this. And I remember in elementary school, she had a friend. So she had this friend who was bisexual, very, very clear about where her interest was. And now I'm talking grade 5, grade 6, so 11, 12, almost 13. And I remember they were in Bridget's room, a group of kids. It was her birthday. And this young lady was just like, yeah, I'm bisexual. And Then the boy was like, no, I just like girls. And then my daughter was like, yeah, I'm bisexual too. And I was, she's like, because I like boys and I like girls. And like, as a parent, like, that's fine. Love who you want. Like, that's our family, you know. But I was kind of questioning, like, do you really know what that means at like that age, you know? And
I think you kind of do and you kind of don't.
Right. But I think when it was explained to her, like, you like boys and you like girls. Well, Bridget had like,
yeah,
friends who were girls and friends who were boys. So when we, and then I talked about, like, okay, I'm cool if that's what it is, but let's see what this means. So, you know, there's some girls you like to kiss. There's some boys you like to kiss. And she's like, oh, I don't want to kiss anybody. So I was like, fair enough. But then moving along, she had this other friend who again is exploring their sexuality and even their personage and who they want to be, like, is sort of discerning if they're male or female physically and this and that. And this friend seemed to have like a whole like choose your own adventure to sexual identification kind of book. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. So Bridget would describe something or they'd be talking about it.
Exploring maybe.
Or, right. But this individual had a title for everything. You know, she's like, so Bridget will come home. Well, so-and-so thinks I'm a femboy now. I'm like, okay, well, what's that?
Femboy.
Yeah. So it's just a female who likes, like, we used to call it a tomboy, but apparently that's a derogatory term now. And I was just like, Bridget, do you not see anybody else in your life who's like that? Like, all your aunts are technically femboys. We're all girls. Yeah, we like the feminize and get all dressed up, but we like to play rugby. We like the male aspects too. And I go, you know what? I don't think you need to worry about a title. How about you just love who you love? And then she came, you know, she's like, well, maybe I'm asexual because I'm really not interested. I go, my dear, you're possible. Like 15. Yeah. Like, you have other things on your mind. Yeah. I go, I wasn't interested really. Like, I mean, I had crushes, but till later because I was that kid. Like, I was friends with everybody. Boys didn't like me in high school, right?
It's weird. Like, I remember when I was going through puberty being pushed towards girls. And I had girlfriends. Like, I had a few.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know what you're supposed to do. Like, mm-hmm. You go on dates and you hold hands and you do little smooches and things. And I didn't get it. Like, it was so bizarre. And I remember thinking at the time, as this is something that I used to say a lot. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'll never fall in love because I don't think I can. Like, that was my kind of like reasoning. And until I remember there's this one particular sleepover at my best friend's house where for some reason he decided he was going to do kind of a Tom Cruise underwear dance thing on his bed. And I remember sitting there watching him dance around in his tidy whities going, oh, this is must be what everybody's getting all hyped up about. Like, oh, this is not good. And having that realization, like feeling that sexual desire for and having it understand what it is when it's not what you're supposed to is so confusing. It is so difficult to map out, like, what the hell is happening? Mm-hmm. Especially like, and this would have been like, I don't know, like late 80s. Like, it's like, this is not, there was no, I had to figure it out by myself. Who was it? Nobody was telling me this was a thing. Like, it's certainly not the priest. Like, it's just like, it was really, really weird. Yeah.
And I think that's, and I didn't mean to sound like, do you really know? Like, you don't know at that
but
age.
You don't
and,
know.
Right. But exactly.
You do,
like,
you do, but you don't.
You don't. Like, do I really have like my heart and my head? And there's all this language. Yeah. And again, so where I think, you know, our day, there was still that whole, you know, heteronormative, like, this is the way you're supposed to be. Now I think the pendulum swung the other way.
A little bit.
And almost like, okay, you have the freedom to love whoever you want, but I think that can also be confusing too, right?
Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's confusing.
How do you navigate?
I think,
right?
I personally think it's better because I remember crying myself to sleep on multiple nights when I figured out this is what was happening.
Okay.
Because you're surrounded by this world that has taught you that this is bad. Like, this,
yes.
And so I don't know if it's important to be confused or if it's bad to be confused. I think what's bad is not having the support and the space to explore and yes. figure out that confusion. I think we're all confused. I get confused on a daily basis. And I don't think it, like, I feel like we demonize sometimes bad emotions and bad feelings,
yeah.
but it's part of being human. It's part of the human conditions. And I think as kids and teenagers and young adults, as you grow, part of growing up is learning to deal with these bad feelings and emotions and, mm-hmm. and managing them and doing things in a healthy way. So I think it's okay if people are confused as they're growing up. What's not okay is putting them in conversion therapy or right. not giving them the support they need or insisting that they are one thing versus another. Like, I always find that it's one of the most destructive things, and I know this because I've talked about this with so many of mm-hmm. my friends in the gay community or in the LGBTQ community. The worst thing you can do to a child who identifies as somewhere in the LGBT tent is to tell them that they're not and deny it. It is the absolute worst thing you can do. If you have a child who comes to you with these doubts, do not deny them. Like,
no,
let them
like, exactly.
explore.
Like,
let
like,
them explore.
Help them find the questions.
Yeah, exactly.
That they need to kind of help them to find those yeah. answers. And so, and again, like it was always so as the debate in the church like increased because it was getting closer and closer for like a canonical vote. These lines were very deep. Again, going back to like three biblical scriptures, you know, of saying like, well, in the Bible, it says it's bad to be homosexual. And I'm like, well, hold on here, you know.
It also says it's bad to eat shrimp. So, I mean.
Well, right. Like, again, it goes into what are the laws? What are the reasons for the laws? Mm-hmm.
Are those actually what the laws meant? There's a lot of debate over, especially that Leviticus one about homosexuality,
yeah.
whether or not, because it's a translation of a translation of a translation, and sometimes things are lost in translation. Mm. And we've mentioned it before that the Old Testament especially was not written no. as a direct narration. Like, it was written with a certain
exactly.
style that so, you cannot take directly.
And in preparation for this conversation, I thought I needed to do a little bit of research. So I found this article, and it's from The Forge Online, and it's from the United Methodist Journal. So that's sort of kind of middle of the road. And they were saying that actually the original word was that man shall not sleep with boys.
Wow.
So like pedophilia.
I think we can all agree.
Right?
There's no debate from me there.
And you know, in the beginning, like if you want to look at it in a historical context, it was, you know, the Jewish culture wanting to stay away from some those sort of pagan and
well,
Egyptian
I think
and
we were just
kind
coming
things,
out of
right?
that Roman Empire where
or part of it, right?
Yeah, where was it the Romans or the Greeks that had it was one of them.
Both.
They both did where yeah. they would have these older men that would solemnize yeah. Younger kids as rites of passage.
Exactly. And there's power and yeah, exactly. all this other stuff in there as well. So that's what it was saying is like, no, we're not gonna do this to children.
Yeah.
Right. And so and then according to this article, it wasn't until like so they had done a research. Let me go back a little bit. And so these authors wanted to find different translations, but they didn't want to take it from like King James version like that. They were talking about different linguistic versions.
Oh, wow.
Right. And so because
it's crazy how many versions there are right now of the Bible.
So many.
And the Americans are doing a really good job of bastardizing the vocabulary, but they're doing a really good job of changing this. Like, so if you take some of these modern texts from these some of these recent evangelical denominations, like it's unrecognizable. Like, it's a complete rehashing
mm-hmm.
of what I grew up reading anyway in the Catholic Church. And I'm not claiming that a Catholic Bible is better than the other Bibles. Like, I think they've all done this to a degree. So yeah, I think your point is like very pertinent.
Right. And so they looked at it from, I'm trying to find the original word that was used. So it first showed up in the RSV translation. Actually, they have this whole book called Forging a Sacred Weapon, How the Bible Became Anti-Gay. Wow. So that could be an interesting read.
I would actually love to read that. That's interesting.
So, right. So it was only really in printed version after the Reformation with the printing press, so 500 years ago. Wow. And so they looked at from French, German, Irish, Gaelic, Czechoslovakian, and Polish. So apparently the original word that they found in the lexicon from 1483 was, you might want to help me with this one because you're sort of better with words, but
Arsenokoitai.
Right?
Arsenokoitai. Wow, that's a word. That is a mouthful.
And it gave the Latin equivalent to pedico?
Ah, pedico, which is a diminutive of pedophile.
Right.
Yeah, so it's like children. Like, wow.
Right. So when they went to these other linguistic versions of the Bible, it was that word again.
Oh, my God. So it's been completely thwarted.
Exactly. And that's so amazing. And then according to their research, that it was only altered to homosexuality in the 1940s.
Yeah, that I knew. That the word homosexuality did not appear in the Bible until the 20th century. And it's largely an advent of the North American kind of evangelical BS.
Right. Of all that happening.
Yeah.
So, again, like, it's so important to not, and this is what you're sort of saying, that bastardization is like when you take that one phrase of it, right? And then the one word and the oneness and you just take it totally out of context. It's so important when you're reading scripture
Absolutely.
To then be like, okay, what is the historical context here? Who were these people? What was happening? Like one other thing, I saw this really kind of cool TikTok video and you know, Jesus was taught, the guy will find it and post it as well. But the guy was talking about how when Jesus was sort of like, you know, not to retaliate, right? Mm-hmm. So like Jesus says, if they're going to slap you, slap, you know, give them the other cheek. You know, if they want to take your shirt, give them your tunic as well, kind of thing. But in cultural connotations, right? Like if you're to get slapped, if that person is then to slap you on the other cheek, that's beyond acceptable, right? You've gone beyond your power structure, right? If someone wants to steal your shirt, you give them more because that means you're naked. And again, that's unacceptable to leave anybody naked. So there's all these cultural innuendos within scripture that modern North Americans, mm-hmm. more so, still do not have the understanding about. So I really, really want to encourage people to not just read, but also understand what's happening behind it. And so then I think it then goes back into these rules, right? So I remember when my ordination was protested, the gentleman who was kind of leading the force on this, he was divorced. Well, guess what? That's also
that's hilarious.
Not accepted. So can you have a hierarchy of sin? And there's been theologians that has people, the corporal and the...
And in Catholic dogma, there's the what do you call those things? The mortal sins? Les péchés capitaux. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. So there's the corporal sin, and then I can't remember the other word either, but it's then the moral sin, right?
Mortals,
like, so you have the physical sin and then a moral sin.
It's not the mortal sins? Because in French, it's les péchés. I think it's les péchés capitaux. I think we have some Googles. We can look it up.
We have some Googles.
You can Google the crap out of this.
And I want to say it was Aquinas.
Les péchés capitaux. Seven deadly sins. The deadly sins.
Well, those are seven ones. So you got mortal and venial.
Okay, so yeah, so I've heard of the seven deadly sins. So yeah. It's like pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, wrath, and sloth.
Right. Like all of that. So anyways, over history, we've created this hierarchy, you know, like, so lying, that's a sin. But if I'm lying to you for a good reason.
Like to save my kids from getting beat up kind of thing because like, you're an abusive person.
Exactly. Or like if you're sick and dying, yeah. You're like, hey, how do I look? Oh, you look great.
You look amazing, baby.
You know, like your friend's like, isn't my baby cute? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Meanwhile, he
right. So is that like.
Looks like a naked potato.
Is that hey, am I going to go to hell for that because I told a lie?
Yeah,
right. Not. But now we're getting into other things. So now we're talking about a physical sin, which was typically more because again, I can't remember the theologian, but he was really about, I want to say Aquinas, was really about how our bodies, like, are the vessels but that which tempt us to go into sin, right? So I remember we did a service for like January and mental health, but we wanted to do like holistic health. So body, mind, spirit. And there are no biblical scriptures that I could find about, you know what, like God made your body, like just that physicality of it, right? So people have manipulated that lack of actual affirmation to say, hey, no, our bodies are not good, right? And I think even St. Paul does a little bit, like, hey, watch your body. It's going to lead you into some temptation there, because we need to be spiritually pure. Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
But I think these are all constructs.
Yeah.
And I love that you brought up St. Thomas Aquinas, because I studied at St. Thomas University in Fredericton, and that was like, mm-hmm. they talked about that guy like constantly over there. And I did this philosophy class where he was an interesting figure that we talked about. And I think I'm also in the process of reading Sapiens right now, which is also always at the top of my mind. But all of these things, like, they're constructs that we made, mm-hmm. like these things. And St. Thomas Aquinas, like, I think he's a fascinating guy, because I found it online. It's physical versus moral sins is one of the yes. things that he divided, and he called the physical sins, their physical evils or sins of nature. And he called that like the physical defects of the world, including like human sickness, impairment, physical death. They're not sins that you commit. Instead, they are the material consequences of the original sins, like you were saying, mm-hmm. the Adam and Eve thing. And then the moral sins are actual voluntary transgressions that you commit in accordance to your own free will. And you're only guilty of a personal sin if you freely choose to commit moral evil. Mm-hmm. So your sin isn't a sin unless you're like choosing to commit mm-hmm. evil in some way. And I guess there's probably degrees of evil. And that's interesting, because I remember my mother and I having conversations about what's a sin. This, because when I was learning about confession, because Catholics, mm-hmm. we just love going to confession and just like saying, like trying to understand, like we did our first confession. I think we did it in grade 4. So I would have been like 9 years old.
Yep.
It's really young to have.
I did mine. Remember, I started in the Catholic Church. Yeah, that's right.
I think it's kind of kooky that we get like.
And they're like, what are you going to say? I'm like, I'm sorry. I got lippy with my mom. Yeah,
it's
like,
so ridiculous.
What did I do?
Nine-year-olds, are you really sinning when you're 9 years old? Like, I just find that concept a little bizarre. But again, to me, that's indoctrination. That's how I define it. It's part of brainwashing. It's part of getting people into following your rules and following your dogma. And anyway, back to St. Thomas Aquinas. He's also the one that came up with the concept of carnal sins.
Yes.
Sins of the flesh. And again, so this means like, a lot of these concepts, like, we made them up. Like, this isn't like God didn't come down and tell us like right. that these things are sins.
Like, and remember, like, theology is those like navigating our relationship with God. Like, what does it mean at this point? And this is where we have these wonderful thinkers, and then we all kind of go into it, right? But I think, you know, and then by exploring personal relationships. And I remember being younger and sort of having that, okay, like I said, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin. And then I'm just like, well, who am I to kind of do any of this? And then I would see these loving relationships that was way more healthy than like the heteronormative one that of like my parents. And I'm like, how is this bad, right? If God is about love and being that ultimate source of love, then why is this bad? Why is this, you know, because then it sets shame. And so again, it goes to this, like this whole horrible guilt cycle of shame and not being worthy. We are all worthy of God's love, no matter of our actions, no matter what we do. Mm-hmm. And so the funny thing is that there's this movie out now, and it won an Oscar, of K-pop Demon Hunters. Mm-hmm. Right. And we sort of talked about this, but there's this character, And it's one of the demons. And he's talking about how he shamed his family and just living in this whole world of not being able to let this go, right? Of that hurt that he caused, you know, that intentional hurt. Well, then we got to figure that out. Now we have to figure out how to reconcile that and forgive that. But if it's no, I really don't think any person within the LGBTQ2 is committing any sort of sin. Like, God created all of us to be different and diverse and to foster love in all sorts of different ways. I mean,
I think what you're saying is that God loves gay people.
God
loves the LGBTQ community.
Well, again, like, it goes back to that original idea. If, yeah. Like, God doesn't create junk, right?
That's funny.
Right? Like, God doesn't create junk.
Well, not funny. It's amusing. It's amusing.
And then just to say you're worthless because of this one element. No.
It's kind of dumb.
You know? So, yeah. I don't think that there. So, I was talking with a colleague of mine who went to this workshop, and another person of faith went up to him and was like, "Well, hey, like, how can you be like ordained and be within the community? Like, isn't that like a huge no-no?" You know, and he goes, "Listen, I have a lot to be ashamed of, but that's not one."
That's not one of them.
You know, so I'll take his line for that. And I think it's just that, like, it's so easy to kind of, because again, it went back to that whole history of like, well, hey, like, there's nothing in the Bible about lesbians. Right?
Interesting.
And that,
well, of course, why would they talk about women?
Well, A, talk about women, and B,
because back then women were basically property. So
right, but it's also the whole spilling of the seed thing, right? You're wasting the life force when you're not trying to impregnate somebody, right?
Boy, am I a sinner. So if you're part of the LGBTQ community, or if you're an ally, and as a gay person, thank you for being an ally. Thank you, Jessica. You are an ally. We need more people like you. I think if I would have been surrounded by like-minded people at the time, it would have made things a little easier for me. I'm grateful for the ones of you out there who are. Do not stop. This fight is not over. LGBTQ people are getting gay bashed at an increasing rate every year. The statistics are alarming, even here in Canada. Even in other countries, it's even worse. So be proud of who you are. Don't be ashamed. And if you need help, reach out. You can even reach out to us if you need to. We will listen and we will help as much as we can. Mm-hmm. So thank you for listening, everybody. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell all your friends about our little podcast. You can find us at barebelief.ca and at our website. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcast at just look for Bare Belief. You can find us on YouTube. Just Google Bare Belief and we will be right there. And don't forget to email us. Did I say email already? No, I don't think so. I'm not looking at
you
my notes.
You don't have your script.
I don't have my notes. I thought I was going to be cute and do it out of memory. But just in case, I'm going to say it again. You can write us at barebelieffpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, everybody. And we will see you next time.